Welcome to the Southern Ground Podcast, provided by Alabama Extension through Auburn University. Extension educators Shane Harris and Dr. Chip East discuss seasonal lawn and garden topics, address common questions, and provide the practical solutions you want to know. Let's dig into our Southern Ground.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Southern Ground. Shane Harris here with you. My buddy sitting across from me is Chip East. We are horticulturists for the Alabama Cooperative Extension System through Auburn University. And here we're for another episode. And today we're going to really dig deep into a very popular topic. A lot of questions we get on improving your soil. And it always starts with the soil if you want to grow any kind of plants.
Absolutely. The plants grow. If we don't have good ground we're putting them in, the growth certainly slows down. And you can't be an extension agent without telling everyone, the first thing I want to see when I see a plant problem, I want to see a soil test.
We are trained to say that in day one, even if we don't know the answer. That's a sort of inside joke, folks. If you don't know the answer, we can't figure it out, then we always say take a soil test to see where we're at.
And we can't look at the ground and know what nutrients are missing. When you see that in a plant, and we've done a lot of meetings on, hey, this is this deficient in this element or that element. Once you see it in the plant, it takes time to correct that. We want to correct the problem before we see it in the plant. So absolutely, let's do a soil test before we plant.
And that's where it starts with the soil. You want to invest in good soil, improve the soil. Sometimes you just inherit bad soil. It's eroded, it's rocky, you don't have any topsoil. In different parts of the country, different parts of the world, sometimes it's just better, it's more fertile than others. But there are some things that we may can do, but from our perspective as extension agents, we get a lot of questions that begins with, I can't grow this plant, just fill in the blank. I can't grow tomatoes. I couldn't grow tomatoes at a horticulturist, so I had to do something different. And that was doing raised beds because the existing ground had drainage issues. It was heavy clay. If you're looking to buy new land, you're looking to do a garden, there's lots of steps that you may have to do to try to improve that soil.
Sometimes you have what you have. And where we live at, we have a lot of heavy clay, true. Well, we just need to improve that by adding organic matter. A lot of times we grow cover crops that adds organic matter. But it always helps to have a tractor. It helps that equipment can speed you up. I would hate to do this shoveling, turning soil with a shovel over acres. Equipment helps, but planting cover crops is a great idea.
Yeah, and there's all kind of soil in Alabama, throughout the Southeast, worldwide. We just don't have those fertile soils like in the Midwest. And here in Alabama, you and I are from Clay County. And Chip, I told you off the air, for years and years, I thought it was named from the soil. Yeah. That red dirt that we grew up with, that's on the truck tires, that's on our feet when we walk in the house and mama fusses about, that red mud, red clay, I thought it was named for that red soil that's there. Typically lacks the topsoil. It's not as rich as other places in the world.
And this is true a lot in the South is there's soil microbes in the ground, bacteria and fungi, that break down organic matter. Well, they're working basically anytime the ground's not frozen. So you go up north, if the ground stays frozen 100 days during the year, those soil microbes are not breaking down their organic matter. For us, there may not be but a few days a year, maybe no days a year the ground is frozen, but at the most one or two or three sometimes, depends on the year, our organic matter is being broken down, so we're continuously adding organic matter.
That's an important thing to start off with, regardless of what kind of ground you have. It is soil. Some people call it a four-letter word, dirt. That's a Dr. Charlie Mitchell joke. Dirt is what you track in the house on your shoes. Dirt's what gets under your fingernails. That's what's on the side of your car. That's the dirt. But we're trying to improve the soil. And a lot of places in Alabama just don't have topsoil left.
And that's a good question to that definition, because by definition, soil has organic matter in it. So if you don't have organic matter in it, maybe you do have that four-letter word. I don't know.
It's dirt.
It might be. So we need to improve that and make it soil.
So how do we improve it to make it soil? That takes time. That takes generations and generations, especially of our Clay County soil that we grew up with, that we still farm in. You've got cows on. I've grown the potatoes in there with my family over the years. It's red. There's no topsoil in there. But I always joke that up the road, there was a neighbor that had darker, richer soil in that same clay soil, and he could grow anything because it was more fertile. It had organic matter in that, and most of our organic matter is gone.
Someone may be doing something to improve the organic matter, and that's important. I will tell you, there's good and bad with clay. The good thing about clay, it holds a lot of water. The bad thing about clay, it holds a lot of water. But I would say the same thing about sandy. The good thing about sand, oh, it drains good. The bad thing, oh, it drains too good. In a drought, I'd rather have a clay soil. If it rains all the time, I'd rather have the sandy soil. So it just depends. But whether it's sand or clay, organic matter is going to help.
Organic matter sources would be leaves, maybe grass clippings that have not been treated. We mentioned cover crops, anything that you can add to improve it back. And that's originally what nature did. You've had organic matter on existing land, bottom land, all that new land that's been transformed from a forest to a field is highly fertile because our organic matter built up over time. We've got to add organic matter back of some form to try to improve it over time.
When you're in the woods, if the organic matter's there, if it's washing, you know, we're hoping that organic matter leaves and things on the ground is preventing the erosion. But if it's washing, your organic matter is lighter than the clay. So it floats away, even on level ground. You think, well, it's not washing. It's floating away with the rain. Yeah, I highly recommend do not, all those leaves and grass clippings, I wouldn't want to pile them on the road for somebody to haul away. I would use them. And, of course, there's a lot of sources you can go buy organic matter, but it's expensive. By far, the cheapest thing may be to grow your cover crops, and that could be another podcast in itself. And the trouble with buying organic matter is it gets expensive quick.
Sources from a homeowner and maybe to a certain extent to a commercial grower or a farmer would be our leaves that we rake up in the fall, you know, a cover crop, like you mentioned, those grass clippings that a lot of people take off their lawn, and then just dump them into that garden area. If you're planting a shrub or starting a new lawn, you can add topsoil, you can add organic matter, you can incorporate that, what they call soil amendment, into that planting hole if you're putting out a tree or a fruit tree at some point.
We can amend that whole, I mean, I say the garden spot, but again, if you have to have enough of it, but it can go. We used to rake leaves, put it in the garden all winter long. Then in the spring, we'd plow all that under. Again, it helps to have equipment. We'd plow all that under, and that's what we'd plant in.
And wouldn't last long, would it, here in Alabama?
Well, right. Again, the soil microbes are breaking it down. That's our trouble, but we're continuously adding it because it helps. And we've done things where here cover crops were grown, and it takes years, like you say, to build soil. Here they're not grown, and you can tell in the picture, when you see the picture side by side, the soils with organic matter do a lot better than the soils without.
So we can control that to a certain extent. We can't control the rocks in the ground. We can control a little bit of the acidity. May not be highly fertile, but we can control a little bit of the fertility as well. And that's where we then, more seriously, that we say, let's start with a soil test. Let's see where we're at first, and then we'll know where to go.
Well, just because I see, again, some element showing up in a plant that, oh, I think it might be deficient in this or that, it could be more than one element.
That's a good point, because we do a lot with ornamentals. We got a plant that's yellow. What's the natural response people do? They want to add fertilizer to it. But a leaf showing yellow properties, the color yellow, doesn't always mean it needs fertilizer.
It could be nitrogen. It could be iron. It could be grown in the shade. I mean, there's reasons it's not as green as something else. And something else, and we're going to talk soil testing today, but you can also do a leaf analysis. And it's basically the same thing as a soil test that they're determining what elements are in the soil. A leaf analysis will tell you what's in the leaf itself. Well, that's the best thing to do, but it is a little more expensive than doing just the soil. I start with the soil, and then if I can't figure it out, we'll move to a leaf analysis. But that certainly will tell you what elements we're lacking in the first place.
And along that side, you can do that if you're doing a greenhouse and growing plants. If you're a farmer and have a hay field, you can do a forage analysis. You can do multiple things. You can take that off an ornamental plant in the yard. So there's different services that we offer that we can tell what you need.
It's done a lot with the high dollar crops, and the crops I work with pecan and tomatoes and strawberries are, to me, the top three that I see leaf analysis on a lot.
Bottom line is, don't guess. Let's take the guesswork out. You wouldn't go to the doctor with a symptom or issue if you have a cough or a headache or something like that and then just randomly take any type of medicine off the shelf. It may not be a serious issue, but a soil test will properly tell you where you're at, what you're currently at, what your pH is. We're going to talk about what that means and what nutrients that you need to add. We've seen soil test results where we didn't need to add any nutrients. There was actually an excessive amount of nutrients.
Yeah, and again, you can't tell by looking. You have to do the soil test to see. The nutrition, to me, that's something we're 100% in charge of. I don't know when it's going to rain. Yeah, I may have to irrigate. There's things that's beyond my control. It's too wet or sometimes too dry and I can't irrigate. It may be the cold's coming in this weekend sometime and that's going to hurt my plant. I'm not in charge of the weather. We talk about cold a lot. Things don't do well when it's over 100 degrees either. You know, we can have issues. But insects, weeds, disease, sometimes I'm not in charge of that. And sometimes it comes in and I didn't know. But the nutrition is a process. I can correct that from the start usually.
That's a good point. A lot of people invest in home lawns, ornamental plantings, even green fields. We'll talk about that with hunters. Farmers investing in a commercial enterprise of some sort. Take that soil test up front. So it's $10 here in Alabama through Auburn University Soils Lab. Do that investment first before you put the sod down. Do that before you do the ornamental planting. Or in this case, before you spend a lot of fertilizer on things you don't need.
Money-wise, the bigger the area, obviously, the more you could potentially save. I know people that's fertilized the same way all the time, whether they need it or not. Well, we talk them into soil test, and we do it, and the farmer said, you saved me, and I can tell you what number he told me. It's a high number. You saved me this amount of money on my fertilizer. Well, I didn't save that. You saved it by doing a soil test and applying the nutrients needed. We know what they need to grow properly, so putting extra doesn't make them grow properly anymore.
Yeah, don't guess. And that means go into the retail stores or wherever you buy your fertilizer. You're just guessing. You just assume that it needs that product because you saw the commercial, you saw it on the shelf, or someone recommended it. What is your justification for buying that particular product, especially quantity? And that's the other thing, finding out what particular product that you need, but how much. One thing our soil test does actually tells us quantity, and we're going to talk about the pH of the soil, and that's where it needs to begin. But how many bags of fertilizer do you need? You know, we just naturally need 100 pounds or 200 pounds. Again, we're guessing. And in a lot of cases, we're causing more harm than good.
People ask me all the time what I recommend. I recommend every element that's needed. And people say, well, what do you mean by that? My neighbor says, hey, you need to put this Epsom salt on a particular plant. Is Epsom salt good? Well, that's magnesium. And if you need magnesium, yes, that's good. If you don't need magnesium, no, you're not going to see a big result by putting that out. I don't know until I see the soil test.
Chip, when we talk about soil testing, one of the things that we always look for on a soil test result that most people don't understand is the pH of the soil. Help us define to our listening audience what it means about the pH of the soil.
The pH scale is 0 to 14. 7 is neutral. Anything below 7 we say is acidic. Anything above 7 is basic, or alkaline is another term you'll see. And it depends on the plant. So when I say something, I'm going to be wrong sometimes when I make this statement, but usually for a lot of plants, a pH of around 6.1, 6.2, 6.3, 6.4, that's kind of what I'm looking for my vegetables. Azaleas and blueberries, you know, certain plants like a lower pH. So there are exceptions to the rules. Some plants will do better at a higher pH, but we're looking at around for our vegetables, 6.1, 6.2, 6.3, something like that's what we're looking for. More elements, the reason this is, more elements are more available for the plant at a pH of around, again, 6.1, 2, 3, something like that. Iron may be more available at a lower pH. but another that's more available at a higher pH. It just depends. But that hits the best of both worlds. So where we come from, I've soil tests may come in and it's the pH 4.2. It's pretty low, 4.2. Even if I were growing blueberries, I'd want to lime that soil if it's 4.2. That's a long way from the, around 5 is what I want for blueberries. And 4.2 is awful low. So, yeah, we'd want to lime that to raise it up. And people say, well, is lime in the soil good? Well, only if you need lime. If my pH was 7, no, I wouldn't want to add lime to that. We're good.
And a lot of people will do that of natural habit, thinking that, hey, I need to add soil. My soil is acidic, so I need to raise the pH, so let me add lime. But again, without the soil test, you can go too far and add too much liming typing materials to raise that pH and have an excessive amount. So you could go from an acidic soil that's 5 to 7, 7.2.
Certain parts of the state in our Black Belt soils, their pH is naturally high. It's hard for them to grow blueberries and azaleas, for instance. You don't see a lot of pine trees in certain. Now, there's other plants, trees that will grow in those soils, but for the most part, where we're at in our part of the state, lime is something we do use a lot. And there's different kinds of lime, but the ag lime we use a lot of is calcitic lime or dolomitic lime. And one, they both have calcium in it. They both have magnesium in it. But in the calcitic lime, there might be a little more calcium, and the other may have a little more magnesium. It doesn't. I mean, plants need calcium and magnesium. And again, that's something else you see on the soil test, what your calcium and magnesium level are. And again, when I see I need one of those, I'm looking at the pH too. I can raise calcium or magnesium without liming, but if I need to lime, I'm taking care of the other at the same time.
It's already in the bag, so it's a benefit. One common question we get in the spring, and this podcast is based on a lot of common questions that we've had over the years. The pH becomes visible as a disorder in tomatoes and blossom end rot. And that's when you have your tomatoes and the bottom of it, the bottom of that tomato begins to rot, turns black. That is 100%. In most cases, related to the pH of the soil.
Well, it's a lack of calcium in the soil. And it's not just tomatoes. We can get blossom end rot on tomatoes and peppers and other things. And it doesn't have to be the blossom end, but yeah, usually that's exactly where we see it at. But it's a lack of calcium. And I say maybe in the soil, but it's a lack of calcium in the plant. Maybe the calcium's in the soil, and for whatever stress, too dry, for instance, it's not taking up the calcium. So it's a lack of calcium in that plant. And that is one of those things where we add calcium to the soil and it may not correct it. Well, we're still under stress for some reason.
And the pH, I describe it as a gatekeeper. It's controlling the availability of those elements, including the calcium,
to be taken up.
Yes, and so it may be dry and it can't naturally take up water, but we've seen blossom end rot when the ground is too wet, especially in our heavy clay soils. So we always recommend we first look at the pH of the soil because it dictates and controls the amount of nutrients in the soil. Also, the amount of fertilizer that you're going to purchase and invest in and apply around those plants. It doesn't matter what fertilizer you put out if the pH is not going to allow the plant to get it. For us, we recommend that your top priority, the first thing to control and fix, is the pH of the soil because that dictates the availability of nutrients going forward.
Correct. We always tell people to fix your pH first. If on a big scale you may only have enough money to do one or the other, do the pH first, and then we'll worry about the other element.
Can I just go to the store and buy one of those pH meters and that tell me anything? We get that kind of call and response. I don't want to spend $10 on a soil test when I can spend $2 on one of those little meters at a local retail garden store.
I don't have a lot of faith in those meters, so I highly recommend send your soil to your state lab.
It'll show you. It may show you if it's acidic or alkaline. It might give you a range from 4 to 5, 5 to 6, but what it doesn't tell you is how much lime to put out. Right. That's the big difference. Do you need 50 pounds of lime? Do you need 500 pounds of lime? Do you need 2 tons of lime? One of the highest soil tests I've ever seen one time recommended 4 tons per acre in part of our East Alabama soils. That's a lot.
And if I were putting that amount, I'd rather not do all that at one time. I'd put a couple of tons down and wait a period of time and put some more. It takes time, and it may take a year for our lime to move down through our old clay soils an inch.
And so let's talk about, what is lime? You can buy a dolomitic lime, you can buy powdered lime, you can buy pelleted lime. It's just ground rock. It's limestone.
Very few people have the ability to put that out evenly on a big scale of trucks and wagons. They can do that evenly. But if it's a small garden, I mean, and I've done it with a shovel. I mean, you can do, but you got to be careful how you put it out. A drop spreader is one of the best things. Where the cyclone spreaders that sling out fertilizer, it does not work with this heavy ground-up rocks. It does not work. Drop spreaders work, but the spinners that throw it out does not, unless you do the pelletized. Now, pelletized is good. It's just more money. The plant wouldn't care either way. It's fine. But one costs a lot more money than another.
We take a soil test. Let's take the guesswork out, like we've emphasized. Let's check the pH. And that's the first thing that I would recommend, is look at the pH and see what range it is. And then the soil test will actually make a recommendation on a per acre basis, how much lime you need to apply. We can then, us agents can then sort of tell you exactly how much you need, even on a smaller scale, maybe a small garden size or lawn. We can tell you exactly what to do in that regards. But take a soil test and let's check that pH first.
Along with the pH, it's going to tell you a recommendation of nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, and we've already talked about magnesium and calcium, but that's what you get on the soil test that Auburn does. And again, doing the soil test, we already know what the plants need. That's no front page news. What we don't know is what's already in your soil. And I can talk about nitrogen. We know what nitrogen the plants need, and they can test it in the soil, but nitrogen leaches so fast, it may, when you get the result back, it may be wrong, so that you wind up getting a result of what the kind of the nutrient uptake of what this plant needs for nitrogen. If corn needs 120 pounds of nitrogen, or peas may need 30 pounds of nitrogen, they're going to tell you to put 30 pounds out. The phosphorus and potassium, phosphorus stays. I mean, if you got your phosphorus at a high level last fall or last summer, it might still be there now. I mean, it wouldn't leave you and all like nitrogen does. Potassium can leach as well, but not as fast as nitrogen. But we look at those numbers. That's what's on the bag of fertilizer, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, in that order. When you say triple 13, a bag of fertilizer, that's 13% nitrogen, 13% phosphorus, 13% potassium in that bag. When you get your results, it'll tell you how many pounds of nitrogen, how many pounds of phosphorus, how many pounds of potassium you need. And we just, some simple calculations to determine how much to put. I will tell you, if you had 100 pounds of triple 13, because it's 13%, you've got 13 pounds of nitrogen, 13 pounds of phosphorus, 13 pounds of potassium in that 100 pounds.
And so the nitrogen, most people may not realize nitrogen is that growth element. That's what helps it green up. That's what helps it grow. And we get a lot of calls and concerns about people putting too much nitrogen out there. And certain plants, especially grass, they need lots of nitrogen. They want to grow. So you put them a lot of nitrogen on there. But we've had calls where people put too much nitrogen on tomatoes, and they grow. They're over head high, but they're not bearing any kind of fruit. So there can be amount of excessive nitrogen on certain plants. Some things, like your beans and peas and all that, they produce their own nitrogen, so you may not need to add nitrogen. And so that's always a hard recommendation. Well, how much do I need? Well, a soil test is going to tell you what you need, but also it's based on the type of plant that you are. Bermuda grass has a high requirement of nitrogen. Peas and beans don't need them a lot. Tomatoes and squash may be sort of in the middle. So we can help you with that too.
Yeah. And you need to know where this is going in the garden. If we do our soil test, here's our results. So, okay, I'm going to go fertilize everything because I'm growing all these crops. But it might be you put that high amount out for the corn, but I've also put, if I did the whole garden evenly, I'd put that high amount out for my peas. And you're right, they can grow vegetatively, and we might not be picking many peas. So we got to separate that out. On this area, don't fertilize as much nitrogen. On this other area where the corn may go, or greens take a lot of nitrogen as well, yeah, they can go there.
The middle number, as Chip mentioned, like a triple 13 as an example, that's the most common fertilizer used, sometimes even the excessive. The middle part or the middle value of that fertilizer bag is phosphorus. And so that 13% is 13% phosphorus. That's described as sort of flower power and to help those plants, especially our blooming plants. They need a lot of phosphorus.
They do, and I worry with telling people that sometimes, and roots as well. But this is what I get. They say, oh, bulbs need that, for instance. Yeah, they do. But I've gotten a soil test in. I shouldn't even tell this story, but it was a very, very, very excessive amount of phosphorus in this bulb bed where it was. And I don't know if they could have went the rest of their life. They could have used that the soil in that bed as a phosphorus fertilizer, Shane. It was just off the scale so high because they heard that was good for blooming, so there they added it.
And that's the concern with phosphorus because it doesn't move. It stays there a long time. And so if you have a soil test where you've already got phosphorus, there's no need to add any more phosphorus. And that's why you see a lot of fertilizers now that have a middle number, which is a zero. You may have a 15-0-15. That's coming on that recommended for a centipede grass fertilizer. And the reason behind that is centipede doesn't like a lot of phosphorus. It can be excessive and actually be toxic, is what our specialists tell us. So, but people don't want to buy a zero, right?
That's right. They'll see that zero number like, well, I'm paying for this. I want to get something for it. But I look at it like, I don't know much about cooking, Shane, but if a recipe called for, I don't know, a half a cup of sugar, I don't know, and there's already a quarter of a cup in the bowl, do you add that half a cup and then you got excess? Or do you, which I don't know, with sugar that might be
fine. I would think of salt. Yeah. Too much salt. Hey, a recipe called for a teaspoon of salt, and I put a tablespoon of salt. Now we have an excessive amount, and we're gonna taste that literally.
Whatever the recipe calls for, that's what we add. Look at it the same way with the soil testing. If they recommend X amount, they know that's what the plant needs. So putting extra, well, for one, that can cost you money anyway, but it doesn't necessarily make the plant grow better.
Chip, that third number or a third letter on the bag of fertilizer, in this case we're using triple 13 as an example for the audience to follow along, is potassium. And on our soil test, it's going to be represented with the letter K. Potassium helps plants take up water and other nutrients. It helps them transpire and avoid drought stress during hot weather, as well as fight diseases.
And there's a lot of, we call them micro elements, Shane, that we don't even talk about much, but you can get results when you do that leaf analysis if you wanted to go there. But I get this question a lot. Someone will say, what's the most important element? And that's like saying, what's the most important link on this chain? Whichever one is missing, that's the one that's the most important at that point in time, I think, whatever we're low in.
And some of it depends on the crop, too. If, you know, again, going to our corn and grass, you know that you've got to put fertilizer out there. They've got to have a nitrogen requirement. And so even when we start to talk about home lawns and thinking that, hey, this grass is going to require a lot of fertilizer, a lot of maintenance, your Bermuda grass has to be fertilized. That's those athletic fields where something else may not need as high a requirement.
Well, if it's my home lawn and you want it, I mean, like with centipede, it doesn't have a really deep color, even it just doesn't like the nitrogen. But it doesn't have a deep, deep – it's pretty, but it doesn't have a deep, deep green like, for instance, Bermuda grass does. It doesn't require the nitrogen fertilizer. An athletic field, it's got to recover from a football game maybe, and it's messed up. There's places that we knock the soil up. Anyway, it's got to recover and grow. It gets beat down all the time. So we put a lot of fertilizer on it, especially nitrogen fertilizer, and it recovers. A lot of home lawns, people put iron, and that's in a lot of fertilizer bags is iron. It'll give it a green color without making it grow. Well, at my house, I might not want it to grow because I'm not trying to fill in where a Friday night football game, you know, did some damage.
You see these different crops, different plants, and different situations. You have specialty fertilizers. We mentioned the triple 13. We mentioned the 15-0-15. And that's typically marketed a lot of times for centipede grass because it didn't like that phosphorus. But then you see certain ones that for tomatoes. You see one for flowering plants. You see some for just a general purpose, indoor plants, potted plants, camellias, azaleas, and all that. And that's still sort of guesswork because we've not taken a soil test to justify it, but they're a little bit more formulated for those particular plants.
You're right. So a lot of people say, oh, this is specifically designed for tomatoes. Or, well, if I don't need the phosphorus and it has a high level of phosphorus, then that's really not what I need, even though I'm growing tomatoes. Now, in the case of blueberry and azalea, years ago we could get for the nitrogen source, you know, that first number nitrogen, for instance, yes, that's the percent in there, but you can get nitrogen from different sources. Well, years ago, it was common to have ammonia nitrate was the nitrogen. And, yeah, that's 34% nitrogen, but ammonia nitrate. Well, a lot of plants don't like that nitrate form, and blueberries and azaleas is an example of it. They like ammonia sulfate, or urea is another nitrogen source. Well, for those bags, fertilizer specifically designed for azaleas or blueberries, they used urea as the nitrogen source or ammonia sulfate. So it still was whatever percent, but it was from a different source. Well, now you're seeing urea and ammonia sulfate in a lot of things, especially urea in a lot of things, and you're not seeing as much ammonia nitrate anymore. And that was true many years ago as far as the why it was specific. Hey, we need to get this specifically designed for this crop. But because of the nitrogen source, it's not as important now as it was years ago.
So you've got to have, there's a balance between convenience and then what you need. Because a lot of soil tests that we recommend, you can't buy that particular amount of fertilizer or that particular blend of fertilizer. You may have to buy two different kinds.
When you get triple 13, again, it's even amounts. In this case, 13% nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. So if you got 100 pounds, you're getting 13 pounds of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. But what if you needed less, for instance, of either one of those? You're right. You can get the 15-0. What if you just needed nitrogen? You can buy just nitrogen. When we're putting stuff out on clover, we don't need the nitrogen. Maybe we just need the phosphorus and the potassium. It's possible that I have to buy two or three different fertilizers and put X amount, and there's simple ways to calculate. I mean, we have that on our website, but any extension office can help you with that. But we can tell you how much to put per acre, or it doesn't matter if it's, you know, I can tell you per square foot. I just need to know how big of a spot you have, and we'll calculate it for you. It's not a problem.
Chip, something that we've learned from day one, take a soil test. Well, how do you take a soil test? Where do you get a soil test? What do you do with it when you get it?
Good questions. And you can go to your local extension office, wherever you live at.
That's even nationwide.
Nationwide, yeah. And they'll have a container to put soil in and a form to fill out. We do in this state anyway. And you'll go to, and I don't know if we're talking your garden or hay field or food plot or turf grass, wherever you're testing, and you'll get samples of soil and put in a container. So we call those subsamples, but you'll go to 15 or 20 places, the more the better. If you just go to one spot, if for whatever reason we spilt a bag of fertilizer if that one spot represents your whole yard, I guess that's fine. But I don't know if that one spot is representative of your whole yard, so I like to go to 15 or 20 places, get soil, we call them subsamples, but soil as deep as the roots are going to grow. So I could almost say 2 to 4 inches, but if it's plowed ground, I go down as deep as we plow, like if it's in a garden. So I put these subsamples in a bucket or some kind of container, and after I gather them all, I mix them all up, and then one sample from there goes in the container you get from the extension office, a box or a bag, and then there's a form you fill out. And the form's going to ask you crops to be grown. Well, if it's my home lawn, in a way, I really don't like to put home lawn. I really want to be specific because Bermuda grass needs something different than centipede, for instance. So write centipede grass or Bermuda grass, and I'd put Bermuda grass lawn if that's what I'm growing. If it's a pasture, I'd put Bermuda grass pasture. If it's a hay field, Bermuda grass hay field. Whatever I'm doing, well, that's what I want to write down. If it's a vegetable garden, in a way, I really don't want you to put vegetable garden. I want you to put peas, beans, squash, corn, the actual crops you're growing, because, again, these different crops, some of them require the same nutrients, but a lot of them are different. So be specific in crops to be grown, and that'll be written on the container that the sample goes in and on that information sheet.
We recommend doing separating the samples. If you have a lawn, fruit orchard, pasture, green field, even a fish pond, you can take a soil test of a fish pond, and that you get more specific versus doing my whole yard and I've got multiple things growing in there, shrubs, flowers, lawn, trees. The more samples you take when it comes to the large sample that you're turning in the lab, the more accurate it's going to be. And that way you have a blend. Plus, for the history of that piece of property or those plants, you've been managing them differently anyway. So you've been putting different fertilizer nutrients on them versus the pasture, the green field, the flower bed, or whatever. They're managing it different anyway. So the more soil tests you take, the more accurate it will be for those specialized areas. But also label that what it is. Is it the backyard? Is it the fish pond? Is it the pecan orchard? Is it the back 40? Or is it the so-and-so's hay field? Is it Papaw's garden? You know, label that very specifically, because when you take a lot of soil tests, then you know specifically what area this was taken from.
If we have a 100-acre field, and it don't matter if it's a very small area, if there's different soil types, I want to collect samples from this area that's in this clay soil, and if I got a sandier soil somewhere else, or if this is in the bottom land and that over there is on a hill, I might want to, now I'm collecting several subsamples to mix together in this bottom area. Then I'll collect several subsamples on that hill, and I'll submit those separately. If I've got a big field, I may divide that out into 10-acre plots and take samples from this 10 acres and those 10 acres and these 10, you see what I mean? And then when I get my results back, and you're right about that, we better know area 1, 2, 3, 4, A, B, C, D. We got to remember where we got these samples from, so I would spell it out. Yeah, this is the vegetable garden, this is the hay field or whatever.
Especially if it's new ground. If you're putting in a brand new lawn, brand new construction home, you have no history. You need to take a soil test to see where we're starting from. If it's new green field, take a soil test. Let's see where we're at and where we need to go. So label those very specifically. Here in the state of Alabama, the Soils Lab through Auburn University processes those. The current rate is $10. And so you can take as many samples as you want, like I said, of those different crops, especially if it's not doing well. If it is doing well, let's see where we're at. We're trying to take all this guesswork out, because for $10, you may not need any fertilizer. You may or may not need any lime. But let's don't spend a lot of money and a lot of labor in something we definitely don't need that actually can cause a lot of harm.
Shane, when we're buying seeds, buying fertilizer, we're planting. We may grow our own transplants. We got time and money in it. We set these out. We're hand-pulling weeds, hoeing. The time invested before we even pick something, and if $10 will tell me what kind of fertilizer to put, and production in some cases double, in some cases more than that, I think you're definitely worth spending the money, because you're definitely spending the time and money on the other end, so it better be productive.
Home lawn specifically, if you're investing in a lot of sod, the prep work, spend $10, let's put the lime down, know what the appropriate nutrients that lawn needs. Let's don't spend thousands and thousands of dollars on a lawn or a new landscape or a green field or even a new farming enterprise and not spend $10 to see where we need to start. That's a good investment. It all starts with the soil.
Absolutely.
If you're interested in taking a soil test with us, a lot of our feed and seed stores across the state of Alabama, probably every extension office will have the soil test kits. You can pick those up. If you live in a county and you want to know where the soil test kits are available, how to get them back to somewhere, if you need to mail them or deliver them to an office, give your local county extension office a call and they can provide that information. Chip, it all starts with the soil, and we've literally dug deep in soil today in our Southern Ground podcast. This is a big class on soils. When we teach soils in Master Gardener and other talks, this soils is a big topic, because everything is based on the soil for it to be successful down the road.
Absolutely, and hard to cover everything in one podcast. So if we leave anything out, you've got additional questions, just give us a call at your local extension office.
Chip, always good to see you, and appreciate your information and your advice in this podcast today.
You too, Shane. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Southern Ground.
Southern Ground has been a production of Alabama Extension at Auburn University.